All right, the meeting of the Veterans Affairs Division will come to order. We have a quorum, so let's get the business of last meeting's minutes out of the way. Representative Doty, would you move the minutes of the last meeting?
Mr. Chair, I would move the minutes of the previous meeting. That was February 13th.
All right, thank you. Any discussion or corrections to the minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, first bill up on the agenda today, Representative Detmer, House File 671. Okay, Representative Detmer, welcome to your committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Did everybody get plowed out? I see we all did. But thank you for hearing my bill, 671. And I would like to move this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Detmer moves House File 671 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Representative Detmer, go ahead and explain your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this past fall I got a call from a constituent, a disabled veteran, and he said he had one of his friends from another state that was visiting who's also disabled. And they went to one of our local state parks, and they both drove in, and of course our current state statute says if you are a totally disabled veteran that you receive a free pass into the state park, just for entrance into the park, not for the camping or anything, but for entrance. And his friend from out of state, of course our state statute says you got to be a resident of Minnesota, so basically his friend had to pay to get into the park. Basically, what my bill does is just eliminates the residency part of the state statute. That regardless where you're from, what state you're from, if you have a document saying that you are a disabled veteran, that you will be entered into the park, for the fee will be waived. So I just felt that was a good bill to bring forward to the committee and to the state legislature, because we want to have our park systems open for anybody around the country who has served our country and our disabled veterans.
Okay, thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, there was a fiscal note on this, and I ask not because I'm concerned about as much about how much it costs as I am as to the estimate of how many people will take advantage of this.
Well, all I know is that the for a vehicle to entrance in a park for a season pass is $25, and for a daily charge is $5. So you could, anybody that's in the vehicle would be admitted into the park. There's no, this would not include camping fees. There's no fiscal note on it, but Mr. or Jim?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fowler. I asked Janelle Taylor, our DNR expert on this, yesterday about that, and she, and you probably remember this, Representative Detmer, having authored that legislation last year, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
To do it for Minnesota residents, and now we're just extending it to non-residents. But she reminded me that fiscal note last year was negligible. The department said it's a negligible cost. I don't even think they prepared a fiscal note. And this would be just a mere fraction of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clare.
Okay. Representative Fowles.
So thank you. I also have a question or concern on 1.12, where it's taking out with a total and permanent service-connected disability. So I think that this bill is a little bit broader than what you described, because it seems to me that it is no longer allowing only the veterans with disabilities in, but any veteran in. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I just think that it's a much broader bill than what you described.
representative.
Chair and representative. The way the bill describes is that you have to be totally 100% disabled. So it's very focused on that.
Representative Fowles.
My point, though, Representative Detmer, is on point on lines 1.12. That part is crossed out, which means that it was that way in the past, but it isn't that way going forward. So if that's what you intend it to be, I think you need to leave that line back in there.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, if you could, when I drafted that, I was just trying to phrase everything a little better. So I struck it from down below where it was essentially just duplicated. And I'd refer you to line 1.9 in support of what Representative Brent has said. Yeah, it's still there.
What Mr. Chairman, Representative, what we're doing is just eliminating the residency part. That's why we struck that language.
Okay, Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, have you conversed with DNR people about do they think this would be a major hassle or not a big deal to just check the paperwork necessary on this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Doty, as Mr. Cleary pointed out, you know, there's no fiscal problem with this. It's just that it's up to the responsibility of the veteran to carry his paperwork with him and show it to the attendant when he enters the park. So the park has, you know, it's not the responsibility of the park, it's the responsibility of the veteran to make sure his paperwork is with him.
Okay. Anything further, members? All right. Anybody from the audience that would care to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Detmer, anything to close?
No, I just feel that we have a great state park system, and we want to open up our state to veterans with the total disabilities and enjoy what we have here in Minnesota. And, of course, when they come to Minnesota, as they travel through, they'll be purchasing other things before they even enter the park. So we feel this is good for our state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer, well, I should ask any further discussion, otherwise we will take final action on the bill. Okay. Representative Detmer renews his motion that House File 671 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agricultural Economies and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Severson, House File 557. All right. Welcome to your committee, Representative Severson.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. Good to see you this morning. And Mr. Chair, I would move House File 557 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Agricultural Economies and Veteran Affairs.
Okay, thank you. And if you could explain your bill for the committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that we've been working on for a few years here, and it's had a history of getting kind of to the end game and then unfortunately dying in the wee hours of the morning here. The previous version of this bill, and let me just kind of give you a little idea on what this is encompassing. We have a lot of small businesses in Minnesota, and Minnesota has determined that small businesses, in order to get some advantage and some moderation of success, have to have actually the ability to be advantaged in some means. So what the Department of Administration has done, what the legislature has done, is told the Department of Administration you need to carve about 25% of those state contracts out state and local contracts, and target small businesses with that preference. And the exact amount of preference, I'm not exactly sure, and we've got the Department of Administration will come forward here, but what we do have in statute right now is we have designated some target groups within those small businesses, women, minorities, and disabled businesses that we give a preference to. When we brought this bill forward, we wanted to say initially that we wanted to add veterans to that targeted group. And this particular bill you have before you today, it does not include them in that particular group under, I believe it's 5C, subparagraph. It puts it in a different form, and it sets them apart from those who are minorities, women, and disadvantaged, to a separate category in which we basically say that veteran-owned businesses have some benefits. They also have some challenges. Those challenges are that when these veterans get off of active duty, whether they're disabled or not, sometimes have a difficult time coming back into the community, integrating into the community, and being able to make a go of it simply because they have not networked within the community itself because of their active duty service. And so, but they also, in terms of benefits, have the ability to access federal contracts under Title 8A, and we'll have a little discussion on that from testimony coming forward to the committee here, Mr. Chair. So what this bill basically has done is it has written into statutes a provision that basically says we want to use veteran-owned businesses and veteran-owned businesses whose at least 51% owned by a veteran, and those that are disabled. And what we do in this particular bill, which is different from the bills that we've previously had, is that the Department of Veteran Affairs makes the determination what constitutes that disabled business. Now, in the past, we've had a fiscal note on this bill that's been about $80,000 or at least one FTE that required someone from the Department of Administration to collate all of the businesses, veteran-owned businesses throughout the state, and then bring those forth. What we do in this bill is we basically say Department of Veteran Affairs, Federal Department of Veteran Affairs, has already made that determination, or as of, I believe, a year ago last March, was tasked with doing this. Now they make that determination. This bill simply says that those businesses that they have determined are now eligible for this provision under 6C of the provision that's before us today. It gets a little technical, and I'd like to have we can go with some questions now, Mr. Chair, or have some testifiers come forward.
Okay, we'll have two testifiers if there are no questions. Any? Oh, we do have a question. Roseanne Falls.
Sorry, you can always count on me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two quick questions for you. One, what percentage preference do those other contracts have that you mentioned? Are they the same 6%, or is that different? And if it's different, do you know what it is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Faust, and I'll probably let the Department of Administration go forward with that one, but I believe it's up to 6%.
Okay. And
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I want to make sure that I understand this. The veterans, in order to qualify for this, have to have some service-connected disabilities. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Faust, under the way it's written here, it should be a veteran-owned business or a business that is determined to be a disabled business under the description as defined by the Federal Department of Veterans Administration. So it's a disabled business, a veteran disabled business as defined by the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. So it's an either-or. It does not
either or, not an and.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, good. Representability.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, can you put that 6% in context? When these applications are sitting there in front of people, what's the usual spread that you would see? Is 6% like a it's unbeatable advantage, or is 6% a little tiny advantage? What would be the usual differential between this business and this business?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Doty. The way it's written right now, it says 6%, so just an example would be if a veteran-owned business had a contract for $100,000, or the contract itself, the major winning bid was $100,000, the veteran-owned business could come in at $105,000, and another business could come in at $100,000, and they would award the contract to the business at 100, for the veteran-owned business at 105,000.
Representability.
I'm still, Representative and Mr. Chair, looking for, and I know this is tough because it's going to depend from contract to contract, but is it usual for there to be a 10% spread, or do bids usually come in at 2% apart, and so when we're giving six, we're like guaranteeing that they're going to probably win here. That's really what I'm looking for, and I know that might be kind of tough for you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Doty, that's a great question. It's a good question, and I think I'll let the Department of Administration come up. They're going to come up and testify and hit that answer question when they come down. That's okay.
Okay. Representative Fowler, or excuse me. Okay. Representative Detmer and then Representative Fowler.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Severson, there's other groups that have this type of legislation allowing them in terms of percentage of contracts, correct?
That's Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, that's correct.
Okay.
Okay, and Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cleary and I just discussed my last question a little bit, and he actually saw that I did have a point there. And so I would suggest, to make sure it does what you're suggesting, that we amend line 1.11 to add after operated by either, and on 1.13 to change the and to or. And then we know that it's one or the other, and they don't have to have both of those to qualify for that. So I would move that amendment.
Okay.
If that's all right with the author.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I would take that on board as a friendly amendment. I had questions on the 1.13 myself as to whether that was going to be exclusive or inclusive, and that was the intent. So on line 1.11, majority owned business and operated either by?
By either.
That was the language suggested to me by Mr. Cleary.
Okay.
Maybe we should just have Mr. Cleary read the amendment. Thank you.
Yes, just to reinforce both of the members. On line 113, in advance of the colon, excuse me, on line 111, in advance of the colon, simply insert by either.
Or either. I think it would read small businesses that are majority owned and operated either, and then it goes into by veterans.
Okay.
On one or two. So
yes.
Just either would be.
Just either.
Yeah.
One, by veterans, such and such, and two, by veterans, such and such. It's the and at the end of line 113 would read or.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Cleary, to read. On the end of 113, just eliminate the word and replace it with or.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, just to amplify a little bit what Representative Detmer was speaking to, currently the women and minorities groups that are designated in this targeted group take up about 3% of that 25%. Of the businesses, and so it's in terms of being exclusive or competitive, there's so much there that it's not going to be an issue in my estimation. And the other is the disadvantaged businesses, which we may hear about today, but typically I think there has been such broad base in the definition of disadvantaged businesses that we do not actually have disadvantaged businesses receiving that designation, which is problematic, which is something we discovered as we were going through this process. And a company called Eagle Trucking will come down and testify a little bit to that. So, Mr. Chair, if you're ready, we could have them come and testify.
The chair apologizes. Yeah, how about that? It is the governor. See, we should probably finish the business on the oral amendment, and then we'll go to testifiers if that's okay.
Thank you.
Representative Severson. Okay, if there's no more discussion on the amendment, we'll take the vote on that. Okay, all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is approved. Okay, let's go to testifiers. The first on my list is Mark Elson. Yes. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Mark Elson. I'm a disabled small business owner called Gemini, and I also am the chapter president for the Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Businesses in Minnesota. Two things I want to applaud. Number one, there's two bills before you that talk about veteran preference, and I just want to applaud everyone in the elected community that when you have two bills that come together in various forms, number one, that's great from a veteran perspective because we've actually got people that care about the veterans and we just need to get wording that makes it right. So, I mean, I applaud both people bringing bills. I mean, it's just awesome to see that kind of effort because Minnesota keeps pushing to try and get ahead where other states are moving forward. So, number one, I just want to applaud everybody no matter what the outcome is on bills that we're getting the initiative done that we need to get done for the disabled community. Two things is we support this bill in 557, and I think it's important that when you look at this year, May of 2008, compared to previous years, is the Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs at the federal level, in May of 2008, has been certified now to become the verifier for a service-disabled business or a veteran-owned business. Before May of 2008, it was a self-certification process. So it had a little bit of challenges when you're self-certifying. But now that the federal Department of Veteran Affairs has taken on the verification, the auditing, the sampling, and making sure that this system is pure going forward, you see language before you today that says, if Veteran Affairs at the federal level says you're a disabled veteran-owned business or a veteran-owned business, that that's good enough. You shouldn't have to hire multiple people and accept that certification for that. So that's what we really like about that bill because it's not burdening the state with any additional burden of financing. It just accepts that certification. The other bill here is it's to the representative question earlier, when we talk about the Small Business Administration, there's a bucket that's set aside, 25% for small businesses, all small businesses in Minnesota, because we're trying to make small businesses healthy and prosper in Minnesota. And within that bucket, there's, you know, I don't know if it's 3%, 4%, 2%, but the targeted groups that get a preference of 6%, it's 3 to 5% of that bucket, maybe more. You know, agencies could differ. And all we're saying is there's enough room for everybody, so people that come in and say that, you know, we're trying to transition back. I'm a combat veteran. I've done two tours, and I happen to be a fresh one, even though I look old, from Iraq. So these kids, and the story I tell is you have a machine shop operator, young kid, National Guard guy, went for 14 months. He lost his arm and came back. He can't run that CNC machine anymore, but he's a smart kid. And what he wants to do is use his head. So he wants to figure out how he can get financing so he can go buy two CNC machines and use his brain to hire two machine operators and be successful. Well, under the current contract, because targeted groups get the 6% advantage, we don't even get to the table. So it's not a matter of what's the spread of the contract and how do you win, because we'll win it on service, product, you know, like every other business, and we want to do that. But what you don't get to the table, and that's where the system's broke. We can't get to that table to play fair. So I just want, we applaud the efforts. We do think it's important that it is a separate section, that it's not part of a targeted group, because we haven't had, well, my opinion is we haven't been past discriminated upon where you have very detailed surveys that you have to go through and prove that in Section 5, where it talks about past discrimination, we just want to take care of vets going forward. You know, we don't look at this historical value. So, and that's what Section 5, where previous year, if I can
if I can really look to the current bill that you're talking about, I think the purpose of this bill says it very succinctly. It's to transition veterans from military to civilian life. We sacrifice their time, and it does, under 1.16 or 1.8, our purpose is economic development, creating jobs, and transitioning veterans, the young veterans, back from the war. Where in other bills that go under Section 5, where you want to put a service-disabled veteran in a targeted group, the purpose of that targeted group, if you look at Section 4, which you may not have before you today, but Section 4, the purpose of the targeted group was to remedy past discrimination. That was the purpose. So sometimes it doesn't fit to put a service disabled in that category. That's why you have a separate section, because you'll see people say, why is there a separate Section 6A? And I think Representative Severson spoke very well about that. So on behalf of Gemini, which is my company, and also the Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Company, we do approve this bill and think it is right on the mark.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Ellison? Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank
appreciate
you. Appreciate
that.
It, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Okay. Next on my list of testifiers, Linda Pomeroy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record, please, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning. I'm Linda Pomeroy, and I work for a company called Eagle Trucking out of Forest Lake, Minnesota. And I'm here today to testify on behalf of my employer. He has applied to be what is considered a disadvantaged business enterprise through the Minnesota DOT. And he has been denied by the state because he is unable to prove, although he's 100% service disabled vet, that he is socially disadvantaged. According to the regulations, they follow the SBA 8A program to the T. As a service disabled vet, they're supposed to allow disabled individuals in the program. And our understanding and our research has shown that there's not a single company in the state of Minnesota that has ever been DVE certified under disability. The level is set so high, you have to prove that you've been discriminated against. And it can't be inferred. It has to be written proof that you have been discriminated against because of your disability. So I'm here to testify today. This has been a year and a half ongoing process. We're in front of the federal DOT right now and should have our decision within 2 weeks as to whether they're going to overturn the state of Minnesota. So as part of this bill and in working on this, we just wanted to get this out here so that people understand that this bill won't address the DOT at this time because of the way the funding is brought down. It's brought down through a grant, and it goes to minorities, and basically women are the only ones in the DVE program at this point. But we do back this bill 557. We wholeheartedly hope that it does pass and that it gives veterans and service-disabled veterans preference in state contracting work.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the testifier, members?
And Mr. Chair, if I could, I looked in the case of Eagle Trucking and went through the entire case here, it's pretty ominous. You have an individual who was in Vietnam on the front lines there under the foliage when the Agent Orange came down, was exposed, had it on his skin, and we have a lot of this currently. Came back to the States, started up a business, became very successful in the business, and then about 10 to 12 years ago began to manifest some of the medical implications of being exposed to that deadly agent. And consequently spent about 2 years in the hospital, having a leg amputated, going through heart bypass, and a number of things that were a result of this exposure to Agent Orange. and through this whole process is now confined to a wheelchair on oxygen, trying to run his business from that position. And so when they went before the MnDOT process, went through the MnDOT process to get the disadvantaged business designation, should have been one of those individuals, it's a slam dunk, to say, hey, here's a veteran who suffered the injuries through his service to his country, and, you know, here it goes, you got it. Well, they basically said, you have, as Linda has shown, said that you have to show a social disadvantage in this process. So I say this to say the system is really broke at this point. If our intent was to reward or at least give consideration to the individuals who have served our country and then suffered the implications of that service through a disability, they should have special consideration in how we put them on the acquisition process in our procurement. So as was testified to, the determination will come back from the federal side. I've talked with MnDOT on this process. They're reviewing their process as we speak. But this bill is a step in the right direction to say we need to make this process more streamlined for our disabled veterans, for our veteran-owned businesses. And I would stand for any questions.
Okay, Representative Dettmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to confer with Representative Ferguson. This was brought to my attention last year, and the owner of Eagle Trucking came up to my office, and they just were looking for help. And they're like at their last stream of help, and so many times I think you've had people come in your offices dealing with situations from your communities, and it's you know, I directed them in the right direction, and with the Military Action Group and Representative Ferguson has some real knowledge on this, and in terms of the bill that he's been bringing forth. I think this is a great opportunity to do something for these businesses, that we have veterans that are trying to develop businesses in their communities and hiring people and keeping people on the job working. And I know that Eagle Trucking has been just a stellar business in my community. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Ferguson.
All right, thank you. Any further questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you, Ms. Pomeroy. Appreciate it. Next testifier on my list, Jerry Kaiser. Okay, Mr. Kaiser, welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and I'm also a disabled Vietnam veteran from two tours in Vietnam as a helicopter machine gunner and crew chief. And the UVLC, which represents the 410,000 veterans in this state, and many, many of the organizations that are veterans service organizations, support this because, well, we feel that as a disabled veteran myself, we earned this, and that Representative Ferguson and the other gentlemen and ladies here in the legislature that support this, is they're doing the right thing, and I appreciate the efforts that they're making, and we would like it to pass on to the next committee and stay as a separate bill and not be put into the omnibus bill, which sometimes causes it to get lost in the great bureaucratic legislature. I appreciate the time to state my point, and thank you for your time.
Okay, any questions for the testifier? All right, thank you, Mr. Kaiser. We appreciate that. And I have one more testifier on my list, Ralph Bartolota. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, correct me, please.
Good morning, Chairman. No, you've pronounced it correctly, and if you had pronounced it wrong, I'd just start pronouncing it like that. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay, identify yourself for the
record.
Yeah,
my name is Ralph Bartolota, and I'm president of a company called Division 21. We're a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business in St. Paul, Minnesota. Okay? I want to thank the committee for considering this bill. I think it's a very good bill, but a couple points I'd like to bring up and like to ask for possible modifications. The bill offers special consideration to all veterans and disabled veterans. The federal government and other states have similar bills, but they've confined it to just disabled veterans only. All veterans returning is a very large group, as was testified earlier, over 410,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. So if we really want to acknowledge the contributions made by our disabled veterans, I would ask that it be restricted and be consistent with the federal government and other states and have this statute for disabled veterans only. And that's really what the testimony. Otherwise, I think it's a great bill. I think it's a good opportunity. The federal statute that provides for this does provide good opportunities for service-disabled, veteran-owned small businesses. And we'd be able to do that same thing in this state.
Okay, questions for the testifier? All right. Well, sir, thank you very much. Testimony. Okay, anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill?
Good morning.
Welcome.
Chairman, my name is Jim, members of the committee, my name is Jim Rhodes. Actually, I used to chair part of this some time ago, so like old times. I'm now with the Department of Administration, and have no problem with the concept of what we're trying to do here. Nobody could argue that. Our concerns are with some of the language that makes it kind of a hard thing for us to work into our system. As an example, and I have two better experts than I, and I mentioned this to President Stevenson already, the state law says up to 6%. And if you take away the up to 6%, you wind up having a 6% on a lot of major dollar figure items. As an example, it could cost your county, by the way, people that buy on the state contract aren't just states, it's counties, it's all municipalities. The sheriff buys their patrol cars another $1,300 for the 6%. Why we have the up to is on bigger purchases, we can have a lesser of percentage, which helps keep some of those costs down. Again, it depends on the commodity, it depends on what the issue is. The other thing that I'd like to mention is that myself as a veteran would be eligible, and it does, as the previous speaker talked about, it does kind of keep the pool so big that it does probably hurt some of the people that you're trying to help, although that's not your intention. I hope you understand that. So I thought we should have maybe Kent Allen from our department, who's here, that would be able to give you a little bit more into some of the language issues and then take some of the questions.
All right, Mr. Allen, welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division of the Department of Administration, which is the division that does the primary implementation of Minnesota's targeted group programs. And like the other speakers, I certainly applaud Representative Severson for bringing forward a bill that would include all or some group of veterans in the state's targeted group purchasing program. Jim's made a couple of the points that and actually my comments are really sort of raising technical or other issues for your consideration. I don't necessarily have a solution to all of these. They're just various things that I think it would be helpful for you to be thinking about as you advance the bill. One is the point that Jim made with respect to the 6% required versus up to 6%. In addition to what he said, which is that it could add significant costs to large dollar purchases, it also would be an instance where veterans would be receiving treatment that is more advantageous than that awarded to minority and female-owned businesses. I'm not saying you can't do that. You probably can. But at least you want to be mindful of the fact that there would be a different standard in the law for veterans as opposed to some of the other businesses that get preference. With respect to the federal government certification, there's been testimony that that would simplify the administration of the program. I think that's true. If we didn't have to do the certification in-house, it certainly would be less of a new staffing obligation on the state. It does raise another issue in that the federal standards for small business are different than the Minnesota standards. In some cases, the federal standards are higher. In some cases, the federal standards are lower in terms of the size of the business. So this is another instance where if we use that federal standard, veterans, small businesses would be different size small businesses than those of women, minorities, and other disabled business owners. One other, perhaps more technical concern is that current Minnesota rules prohibit the award of contracts to brokers, and the belief there is that in most cases brokers aren't the actual provider of the service and probably aren't adding the level of value that you'd want to pay a premium price to get goods or services facilitated through a broker, regardless of whether that's a female, disabled, minority, or veteran broker. These programs are very complex and hard to understand. But I think a few things have been mentioned earlier that I might be able to comment on, where I'm not sure all the information that was provided was necessarily accurate. There was testimony regarding the need to do surveys with respect to women and minority-owned businesses, and I think the suggestion was that you want this to be somewhat different so that you don't need to do those kinds of surveys. It's absolutely true that you do need surveys for women and minority-owned businesses because those are viewed as suspect classes in terms of constitutional issues. If you're going to treat people differently because of their race or gender, you need a particularly compelling state reason to do that, primarily because of the history of treating people less favorably because of their race or gender. Veterans would be a suspect class like that, so I don't think there's any issue that if the legislature chose to add veterans to a targeted group program, that we would need to do surveys to show that veterans had been discriminated against. We don't do those surveys now for disabled business owners. Again, our premise is that those are not disabled businesses don't constitute suspect classes, and if the legislature chooses to award an advantage based on the disability of an owner, that is within your right to do that. There was some discussion of the economically disadvantaged business program in Minnesota, and I think the suggestion was it isn't used much, and actually it's used a lot. The definition is really a regional-based one, and it's not one where administration is really doing more other than looking at some distinctions that are in statute with respect to enterprise zones, targeted neighborhoods under certain other provisions of law. There's a pretty clear statutory definition of what constitutes an economically disadvantaged region. And Dorothy will probably, do you remember how many counties in Minnesota are currently designated as economically disadvantaged? Almost half the counties in Minnesota are economically disadvantaged. So any small businesses in those counties receive a preference because of their location in those counties. And then one last thing, just in terms of a little bit of a clarification. I don't think anything that was testified was incorrect, certainly, but with respect to the MnDOT's federal program, that's a separate program than the one that this bill would address. And I don't think the changes that you're envisioning in this bill would have any immediate impact on the requirements of that federal DBE program administered by MnDOT. So those are my comments. Again, they're more sort of for your consideration. And if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who probably Representative Severson would be the who would address this to, but maybe he's going to need advice from the others at the table here. If we have a minority female disabled individual coming back, is this up to or six percent or up to 6%, whatever we end up with here, on top of the other advantages also given? I can't tell from the wording here if is there language or a commissioner's decision or something that gives you only one break on this is really what I'm asking.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Doty, I defer to the Department of Administration on that. My understanding is that if they are not cumulative, they would be whichever one gave you the better advantage.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. Anything further, members? Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly understand your concerns about the up to 6% instead of 6%. I years ago bid quite a few diesel fuel contracts, and I don't think there was ever a time that there was more than a half a percent difference from the top bid to the bottom bid, and so 6% in a situation like that would certainly give somebody a very large advantage. So, but I'll leave it up to the author to decide if he wants to do anything about that or not.
Mr. Chair and members, you know, we had a little bit of the discussion on this. There's another bill that I'm working on as well, and that's a veterans' preference in terms of employment rights. And I've been before the committee before on that one. My major concerns are when there's latitude at the top, many times that's an excuse that's used to not do the pick. And so I tend to come up with a little heavy hand. I understand in terms of the issues raised here and still being competitive at the local government level, not putting an undue burden price-wise onto them. If there were some assurance under consideration that if the veteran is within the parameters of that 6%, that the veteran would be awarded that, I'd be amenable to that. And perhaps we can talk with the Department of Administration as we move on to this. I think an up to would be acceptable if the understanding was that if the veteran-owned business is in the top tier, that it's the front runner automatically, but you would not have to have the 6% as the margin there. So I appreciate that, and we can certainly change it as we move forward, and I think that's a good suggestion.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the Department of Transportation issue, is that something that we can look at maybe incorporating into this bill to meet that requirement?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, thanks for that question. That is something I have talked with MnDOT right now on. The appeal at the federal level should be back in a couple of weeks. There's nothing that MnDOT can do in this particular case because it's already gone through the process, but it would be my hope that we could work some verbiage into the bill as it moves forward that would address that. That's correct. As the Department of Administration said, it does not address that disadvantaged business at the federal level process here, and we can put some verbiage in here that will do that, and we discussed that a little before we came down here, so I think that would be a goal. The beauty of this of the committee process, members, is that this is exactly what it's made for, so we can kind of vet these things, get them out in committee, improve the bill so that when it gets to the floor, it's the best bill that we can possibly put together through many minds. So I appreciate the question.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I don't know that Eagle Trucking has applied for the state program, and that might provide some other opportunities. I mean, there is a state program now for disabled businesses that's not dependent on being a disabled veteran, but individuals with substantial physical disabilities can qualify for a state program. And if some of the work that Eagle was interested in came from state agencies other than MnDOT, it might provide them with some opportunities they haven't had.
Mr. Chair, sure. I believe Eagle Trucking has applied, and maybe we could have somebody come down and maybe address that issue.
Mark Elson again with Gemini, and I just want to set the record straight. The system is broke, and so when they say that a service-disabled veteran can apply on these programs, you can, but the rules that you have to comply with are like a social disadvantaged company. So there's no way 90% of the disabled veterans can apply, and you heard a key word. He said substantial. When you try and prove substantial, everybody and their mother determines what that is, and it doesn't comply with the Federal Affairs Guideline. And so a lot of times, there's a good case. I'm 20% disabled. There's a good chance I'm going to 40% because of my exposure to some hazardous material. If I have to wait until I'm substantially disabled to start my business, you're actually discriminating against me. Because you're waiting until I'm totally incapable of running a business to start a business. So there is some devil in the details, and I just want to set the record straight a little bit on that. And then she can talk about how she has applied and it hasn't worked. Thank you, Mitty.
All right, thank you.
And we have applied for the state program. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Linda Pomeroy. I'm with Eagle Trucking. And we have applied for the state program. We're in the process of right now being certified for it. But as this happened on Wednesday, I attended the meeting for the Central Corridor Project and spoke to a member of the Met Council regarding targeted business group and how much was going to be available for them. And I was told nothing. So when it comes to those types of contracts, there's very little out there from my point of view that we would be eligible to get. We have applied for it, and it is just another step in the process. Mm-hmm. As far as the DDE program, they basically took a man who's in a wheelchair with 3/4 of a lung and missing a left leg and said that it is merely an inconvenience of life and not determined to be a substantial disability. So that was why we appealed the process. So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Mm-hmm. Pomeroy. Anything further? Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, this is some pretty compelling stuff. When you have an individual who served his country and then can't even get consideration for it with a business side. But that's not why we're pushing this forward. It's a reason, but it's not the reason. The reason is because we have these warriors who come home and have not had the networking capabilities. They have not had the ability to contact people, get to know the system, and begin to work the system as many of our citizens here have in the state. Classic case was a couple of Marines that came back from Iraq 2 years ago when I first had this bill. They put together a security company, and these were guys that had been all over the world doing security for, you know, sheikhs, for people of all tiers of society, international. They put together a security team, and then they went to get a contract with the city of St. Paul for the Republican National Conference that was going on here. They couldn't even get in the door. With all of that experience, because they did not have the contact at the St. Paul level, they could not even get in the door. So 6 to 8 months later, they go and contract with Blackwater and back over to Iraq. But what's that saying? We have a tremendous talent in the state that comes and they try and do business, they try and bring their skills to the state. And this goes to the issue of disabled veterans versus a veteran-owned company. This is one of those issues that we need to just say, you know what, we're not trying to just reward them because they have suffered a disability, but we want to give them the ability to compete in our economic system in Minnesota, be a contributor to this state with the skills that they have acquired, usually internationally. And those are the type of people that we need in our marketplace. And in order to do that, as has been testified here before the committee, we have to give them some kind of open door to get them in the door, to get them to the table, to be able to negotiate with some of these state and federal contracts. We're talking about billions in terms of federal contracts under Title 8A at the federal side. If we designate these businesses, not just disabled, but veteran-owned businesses, if we designate them, inform the individuals in the state that are veteran-owned businesses that they have an avenue that they can go to get to some of these specified contracts, we can bring monies in to the state from the federal side that we heretofore have not. And so that's part of what this bill is about, is to say, you know what, we have capabilities that we are not accessing in the state in terms of personal talents, and this bill is meant to bring that forward. And the reason that we put it under a separate category from the women, minorities, and disadvantaged businesses is because that is why we're doing this. We are doing this because we want to bring that talent forward. You could argue that to this point they've been discriminated against, although it's been a latent discrimination. It's because they have not had the opportunity to have the contacts. And now we're trying to overcome that by saying, you know what, this is a special group that we want to give them a step forward. So, members, this is a bill in process, and I know that Representative Newton has the same bill. He's going to adopt this language, and however this goes forward, I will be at Representative Newton's side if that's, in fact, how we're going to go forward with this. And our goal is not who does it, it's who gets it. And what it is for our veteran-owned businesses, for our disabled veteran business, and for the people of Minnesota.
Okay. I think for the sake of time, we'll take action on this bill, and then if there's, you know, the discussion will continue with Representative Newton's bill. So, Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 557, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Newton.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Newton, welcome to your committee, and would you like to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to move House File 715, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Okay, Representative Newton, and you have an amendment. Would you like to move it this time?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. It's H0715DE1.
Okay. Representative Newton moves the DE1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, all in favor say aye. I'm sorry. Representative Newton, and you want to amend the amendment, then, is that correct?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair. Talking with Representative Stevenson, we'll do this as we go along in the process.
Then we'll, let's move the amendment so we get it in the shape you want it to, and we'll work with it at that point. Mr. Cleary?
Excuse me, Representative Newton, I think he was referring to, I think the chair was referring to the either and the or. If you want to make
we
that
we can do that just to make it compatible. Mr. Chair, with your indulgence here, this bill of mine actually is an amalgam of Representative Severson's bill and a bill that Representative Kahn had. And so we're putting them together into one bill, and I think Mr. Cleary is right. The same wording that you changed, it would be on my amendment to be on line 117. We would add either with the colon, and then or after line 1.9.
Okay, and I think you can just incorporate that before it makes it.
Good.
Okay.
But I actually don't have much to add to it. Representative Severson, this is essentially his bill, and the bill that, that Representative Kahn had, which was HF 611. The difference between this bill and Representative Kahn's bill, which her bill started off at 50% disability. This bill covers all veterans with disabilities.
Okay. Do members understand the amendment then as... Okay. All in favor of the DE1 as with the changes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Go ahead, Representative.
Well, I have nothing to add. you know, it's all been said. I don't know if anyone wants to testify. The Commissioner Rhodes met with me yesterday and express the same views that you heard today, and I think we'll let this go forward to the next committee, and if we need to discuss this any further with the Department of Administration, we can do that.
Okay, good. I'll offer one more opportunity for many of the audience that may want to testify for or against. Okay, anything? Oh, we have one person. Okay. All right, welcome, and to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Gertner. I reside in St. Louis Park. I'm a veteran of the United States Navy, and I'm also a member of the DFL Veterans Caucus. I'm here today claiming only to represent myself. And I would like to thank Representative Newton and members of the committee for considering this bill in order to provide preference for veteran-owned businesses. And I would like to speak in favor of the applicability being to all disabled veterans and not having a threshold of disability like 50% or another arbitrary number. And my reason for saying that is because I believe that there already exists a documented discrimination on behalf of the military services, in that the Navy and the Air Force are basically more generous in granting service-connected disabilities than the United States Army and the Marine Corps are. And unfortunately, the discrimination is against the ground forces, which are getting pretty much the brunt of the action now in Afghanistan and Iraq, but not all of it. And so I would like to see the state provide for contracts to go to all disabled veterans and not have a threshold numbers so that the state wouldn't perpetuate any of that discrimination that exists at the service level.
Okay. Questions for the testifier members? All right. Thank you, Ms. Curtin.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Anybody else from the audience? All right. Good. Representative Newton.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And you know, I'm new to this. There have been people who have been working on this for a few years, and I just want to express my appreciation for what they've done to move this forward to, I guess, the point where I've got a bill here. Having said that, I would like to renew my motion that HF 715 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Okay, good. Excuse me. Representative Newton renews his motion. We'll pause this one. Representative Severson, you're at the table. Is there anything you wanted to say again? Or is that, okay.
No, good. Mr. Chair, thank you. No, Representative Newton said it all.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, then let's go ahead and vote on the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Newton and Representative Severson. Okay, we're on to our final bill for the day. Which is what Representative Doty, House File 905.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move House File 905 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. And I do have an amendment as we get started that we should probably take care of right away.
Okay. Representative Doty has moved his bill, and is this the H0905A1 amendment?
This is the H0905A1 amendment, yes.
Okay. All or any discussion on the amendment?
I think we need a small correction that I would like to incorporate here. Where it says, instead of just says commissioner on the amendment, it should say delete commissioner of military affairs in both 1-3 and 1-8.
Okay.
So we're inserting adjutant general, but we're deleting commissioner of military affairs in both lines.
Okay.
And I would move that amendment.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. None? Okay, all in favor of the A1 amendment with the changes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill doesn't take too much space to write, but there will be a little bit of discussion about it, and I think just for the background and everything, I'll just simply turn it over for explanation to Colonel Lawless and let him present this, and then we'll take questions.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Colonel Lawless, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Colonel Eric Lawless, the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota National Guard. This recommended change to statute came about as a result of our reintegration effort and our Yellow Ribbon community effort. And what we do is we have volunteers coming together to support the returning veterans to Minnesota. And we currently don't have the authority within the state to accept volunteer services. And what this does is clarify and authorize us to receive those services. And as a correction indicated earlier, what we did was basically lifted this statute from the Veterans Affairs Department, so we're using existing state statute and just missed part of the title on that. But it really allows us not only to accept those services, but also to provide just a little bit of compensation for those limited number of volunteers who maybe travel a distance to help those returning veterans or provide training for other volunteers. Also want to provide emphasis that we're not going to use this in any way to replace full-time or part-time employees. And in fact, we're prohibited by doing that by federal statute, as well as existing protections within our union agreement that we have with other employees. So in no way are we going to replace any full-time or part-time people. And then finally, also, this provides us a legal framework where if the volunteer is working for us and they should happen to be injured or hurt in some way from an accident, we would be able to use some of our existing processes in order to make sure that they're taken care of so that they're not hurt helping us, and then there's no way that we could help them. That concludes my comments, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Colonel Almas. Any questions for either the author or the testifier? Okay. I should ask. Anybody from the audience that wish to testify for or against? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Mark McAfee, representing AFSCME Council 5. We have some questions or concerns over this bill. First of all, the colonel just delayed our concerns on one of them. The first one was that we're feeling voluntary services should not replace work performed by state employees in any way. I'll check that one off in good faith. Secondly, if we have written agreements, particularly if they involve any provision of services that would go beyond the sort of voluntary activities talked about, it should follow the state procurement law, Chapter 16C. But there's an issue, regardless of that, and I want to make plain at the outset, I salute our veterans. This isn't about, what I'm about to say isn't about in any sense picking on veterans, but it's an issue if any department in this state offered to pay rate the same rate, the mileage rate of state employees. State employees right now get IRS rate for business purposes. If they use there is a distinction, I think, if they use a state car versus their own. If they use their own, they're paid a lesser rate. So IRS business rate right now, as any of you that are in business would know, 55 cents per mile. You get 24 cents a mile for medical or moving purposes. The rate for voluntary, and I'm getting this right off an IRS, off their website, 14 cents per mile driven in service of charitable organizations. And this bill is written, the last sentence here says, reimbursement for travel expenses incurred in the performance of official duties at the same rate for mile state employees. So it talks about uncompensated services, and the colonel just mentions a little bit of compensation. I can assure you that if they comply with federal law, that any such volunteers they'd have to presumably deduct the 14%. 41 cents a mile would be compensation, and it would be taxable, at least as far as I see that. So I'm not here to, I want to make it plain, I'm not here to not salute veterans. Also, I'm not here, I'm not the Congress of the United States. I didn't set that rate so low at 14 cents. It probably should be higher. But I think there is an issue to mix and match voluntary and compensated and uncompensated. So I mentioned that to you so that that you comply. I think the intent of it, again, seems worthy. But I think I'd also say that people can volunteer for any number of activities. And so one would have to question whether you'd make exception for this versus something else. So with that, I would stop answering questions, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Questions, members? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so my understanding is the way the bill is written currently, it's reimbursed at 55 cents per mile, so they would have to declare 41 cents as...
Well, what I'm getting at is, Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, the state of Minnesota, and when we talk about, you know, state employees, the state of Minnesota and it's, again, it's business purposes. You're talking about people who are hired, they're in the course of the business. So any, you know, apparently the state, as well as any private business, is able to reimburse as an expense up to 55 cents a mile. There's a distinction under federal law, under the IRS rules or whatever, that for voluntary purpose, if you're going to say that I'm going to take a carload of people to welcome the troops home, that type of thing, presumably if you're volunteering, you could charge 14 cents a mile. You're also able to, if there's parking expenses or tolls, you are able to claim those. But I think what our concern, again, of course, is you could say it's self-serving on my part. On the one hand, I'm here representing state employees, and again, I appreciate the colonel saying
in no sense is what is intended here, to have people do work to supplant what our state employees would do. And any business, by the way, of course, that would seek to do such can go through the state procurement law, in which case the agency has to state that they can't use, they have an inability to use state employees to perform work. Therefore, you go to a private business, perhaps, to carry it out. You get into volunteers, and are you a volunteer or are you in business or an employee? There's a distinction, and you start going above that. I think we're getting into some thin ice, perhaps. And I can tell you once again, I don't think there's any question that it would be considered compensation to go in excess of the 14 cents up to the 55 cents. And I think, again, I don't think there's any question it's well intended. And again, I think, you know, I don't know, I don't know if it's the Congress or the IRS itself perhaps has authority to raise that rate. Probably it should be raised, you know. And personally, I wouldn't have any problem if we paid people at the same rate. But those were my points. So I think it's something that should be, I would recommend that the author investigate that further and it be clarified, you know, before it passes the next step, perhaps.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson, I'm definitely going to go down that path, and I thank you for raising that. It's we do have a indefinite reference here, apparently, which hopefully a conversation with Minnesota Revenue can clear up before the next step in this. I do want to assure people that the first conversation we had was we will not be replacing employees with this. This is a straight-up bill to help those who are helping our troops, and nobody wants to stand in the way of that. So we'll be clarifying this as soon as we can.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, we have a little additional information.
Okay, Colonel Allman. Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members, and just if I may clarify a little bit, we use similar language already on the federal side for people like family readiness group leaders who serve in a regulatory function that they're allowed to, so they can be placed on invitational travel orders, and we use similar business rules for this, which means if it's less than 50 miles, so if someone's volunteering locally, which is well in excess of 95% of the volunteers, in no way would be looking for providing them compensation. It would just be that select group of volunteers who are mentors and leaders that would help develop other groups in other areas. And you're really providing that exceptional travel when they're going a significant distance, so you're not creating a hardship on them. And in the federal way, and what we will check and confirm on the state side, is that in no way is that taxable income for those individuals, and it's compensation for their travel. So we'll confirm that as well to make sure we're operating the business rules and not creating a taxable situation for those individuals.
All right, thank you. Representative O'Trema, did you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that on 112, the official duties, does that cover it? By using the official duties, is that piece cover the fact that you could use 55?
Either one of you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osemba, I am not an attorney, and my kids who are continually tell me not to try to be. I will not interpret that term. It certainly seems like it might help, but that's above my pay grade to determine that.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cleary, do you have any insight on that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, not very much, but in response to Representative O'Trema's question, I don't think that clarifies it. It certainly doesn't for me. But again, I don't have.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further, members? Okay. Representative Doty?
Mr. Chair, I would, realizing that we do have a little bit of work to do as this moves forward, for clarity's sake, I would renew my motion that House File 905, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Okay. All right. Representative Doty renews his motion. Any discussion before we vote? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, okay. We're just double checking to say as amended, but thank you. Okay. We did the ayes. Any nays? Okay, the motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Doty and Colonel Ulmer. Okay, I believe that's it on the agenda. Yeah, we're finished for today, members. We'll meet again next week. Meeting adjourned.